everyone. Welcome to another episode of the SharePoint Sideshow. I'm Paul Stubbs. I'm a technical evangelist for SharePoint.
And I'm Donovan Follett, and I'm a technical evangelist for Office, and it's good to be back for this second episode here, Paul.
Great, yeah. So today what we're going to talk about is getting started with SharePoint as a developer platform. How do I set up and run my development environment? What's available and what I can do in terms of a VHD that we have that's already available?
Certainly, that's one of the biggest issues, getting set up and getting started in this. And the nice thing about this VHD is it puts us into a, you know, a protected environment, an environment where we can build it out and make mess if we need to, and add new technologies and new capabilities. But the VHD is a great place to start. So that's what we'll look at here.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that, you know, I'm not an IT pro. Right, I'm a developer. Mm-hmm. I don't know all of the intricacies of setting everything up and installing all everything and getting SQL set up and Visual Studio installed and SharePoint and everything, right? And so for me, this is the biggest thing. It really helps me because everything's installed. Everything that I need to get going as a developer is already pre-installed in that VHD.
And we've tested that out as well, too. We have our training sessions that are out on Channel 9, and all of those training courses, each one of those modules has a specific setup module, a setup PowerShell script that can deploy directly into this VHD. And so we've used it, and we've tested it out really well.
And I think generally across the company, we're using this VHD to build all of our hands-on labs. No matter if you go to a conference or you're from another team, this is always the VHD that you start with and you test with, right?
Right, right. And the nice thing about this, too, it's a 180-day evaluation, so you have a long time to be able to test it out and work with it.
Great.
So there's a couple VHDs, though. There's a 2010 7A that's available and a 2010 7B. What's the difference between these two?
Well, no, 7 is the version number, right? So there were 6 before this one, right? This isn't kind of fancy office math, right?
Right, this one just hit the public.
So we have 7, and then there's actually an A and a B, and they're really divided into two parts. Mm-hmm. But as developers generally getting started, you just want the A. And the A contains, it has Server on there, it has SQL Server, it has SharePoint fully installed, it has Visual Studio, it has Office. It has other tools that you may need to develop on there for doing Silverlight development, for example. And really, everything you need to get started is there and installed.
Right. It's the full meal deal here. We have all of Office on there with Office Pro. We have Visio on there. Project is on there. So there's a lot of different things that you might want to test out and work with. If you want to build an add-in for Visio or an add-in for Project, you can also do that as well on this VHD.
Great. So this is the one you want to use as if you're a developer, is the 7A image. So when you hear people talk about the 2010 7A, this is the image you want.
Now, the 2010 7B, what does that have? It has Exchange on it. We don't need that for, at least for what we're doing.
Yeah.
So this makes this is just an optional VHD in our case.
Yeah, it has Exchange and it has unified communications on there and stuff like that. If you're doing those type of applications, like let's say you want to develop a workflow and you want to send email as part of that workflow, you might want to test that environment. This is, you would run both of these VHDs.
Okay. Okay, excellent. So, what do we need? This is a VHD that, as I have come to find out, is a pretty large download, of course, and so you want to make sure that you give yourself enough time to download this VHD. But once you download it, what do I need as far as my environment is concerned, then?
Well, you need a Windows Server machine, so a Windows Server 2008 R2 machine that's capable of running Hyper-V, right? Because this is a VHD, it's a Hyper-V VHD, and we're going to run that in the Hyper-V environment. That means we need a little bit of memory to run.
Sure.
So 8 gigabytes is what I recommend.
Okay.
It's not a hard technical limit, but if you want a good experience, 8 gig is really the minimum that you should use.
Okay.
And then the VHD itself is fairly large, so it's a 50 gigs requirement for hard drive space.
Okay. Now, that's not necessarily what you download because it is in a RAR compressed file.
That's
so
right.
In this case, that's what it's going to expand to.
That's
so you need to have that disk space available.
And generally, this is why we only run one VHD to two. So if you want to run the A and the B, then you need more than 8 gigs. You'd probably need at least 12 gigs of RAM to run both VHDs at the same time.
Okay, excellent. So setting this up, what are the steps that I need to take to set this up? Once I get the file downloaded, I get it all extracted out, how am I going to set this up?
Well, so first thing is go to the Microsoft download site, download all of the files. It comes in a multi-part zip file. Download all the parts and then run the self-extractor, which will unzip all the parts into a VHD state that's ready to be imported.
Okay.
Once you have that state, then you can open up Hyper-V Manager, and then you can go and import that VHD. Once you have the VHD imported, then you can adjust some of the switches, the virtual switches that are in Hyper-V. You can adjust some of the configuration information and adjust some of the network settings that you have for your Hyper-V, and you're ready to go.
Okay. All right. Let's see just how easy that is. Oh, we need login credentials.
So this is the big one that you know we get a lot of time. It's like, yeah. I've got this all set up. Now how do I log in, right?
Right.
Well,
right.
All of these VHDs, the 7A and 7B, all use the administrator as the user ID.
Okay.
And passatword1 is the password. And, of course, the domain is Contoso.
Okay. So excellent. Those instructions are so good, Paul. Let's see if we can go ahead and set this up.
Show us how this works.
All right. Well, we already have one of these baked in the oven here, but what we'll do is just step through the process and how you would go ahead and set this up. So once you've downloaded the files, you've unzipped them, then you can just simply point to the location of those files. We can go to import the virtual machine in Hyper-V. We'd browse to the location of the files. In this case, we just browse to this folder here. Yours would be 2010-7A. Select that folder. We would copy in the virtual machine to create a new unique ID and simply import. Now, I've already gone through that step, but it's a very simple process.
Sounds pretty easy.
So we'll cancel out of that. Next, once the machine has been imported, you want to make sure that your virtual networks are there so that you have the right virtual network set up in your Hyper-V instance. So here we'll go ahead and go into our virtual network. We have two network cards, switches that are available on the Hyper-V. One is an internal connection and one is an external connection. So we want the Hyper-V virtual machine to be able to get out to Bing and to be able to download additional software if you want to.
So the external switch maps to my physical network of
yes.
my machine, the
yes.
host, right?
Maps to your physical network, and then the internal is going to be for your machine itself. So we'll go ahead and cancel out of that since we have those set up. Now again, we've imported the machine, so the next step is to go to our settings file for the machine itself. And here we can configure some things because there are defaults that have already been set in the virtual machine mm-hmm. as it comes in. So we can go in and we can set up our memory. So here you can reduce that memory footprint a little bit, or you can add to it if you want to. So what do you recommend?
Well, I always recommend if you have an 8-gig machine to give 6 gigabytes to the virtual machine and leave 2 for the host machine.
Okay.
That usually works out pretty well. And then give it as many processors as you have available on your machine.
Okay, certainly. I can set the processors here. And then also, this is where we are going to go ahead and map our internal switches. So we set the first virtual switch here. We set that to the internal adapter, and then the second network adapter we set to our external.
Now this will make these virtual network cards appear in the virtual machine, right?
Right.
And these are how our virtual machine gets mapped or bridged through to other network resources,
right,
such as our network card.
Right, right. Once we've done those simple settings, we click OK out of that. Now our virtual machine is ready and we can simply right click on it, and in this case we're already running, so we would go start. The machine, when it starts up, Paul, you know, the first time it's going to reboot, it's going to ask for a restart. Because why?
Well, the reason is because the host machine processor or architecture may not necessarily map with the exact machine that the image was built on. So it does kind of a plug-and-play, process.
Sure.
Where it says, hey, there are some things changed, this architecture is slightly different, or you have 2 or 4 cores, I need to reset this and then reboot one. So you may experience that.
Okay, so that initial reboot is just getting that virtual machine essentially mapped completely to your hardware.
That's right.
Okay, so that initial boot is going to take place, reboot is going to take place, but then normally when I come into this virtual machine, I've noticed that there's a script that always runs. And so what has the product group done for us there?
Yeah, they have this script called the warm-up script, which is really great, especially if you're doing demos and such. Because what it does is it basically goes and pings each one of the servers or resources on your machine, each one of your site collections, if you will, and pre-warms up or pre-jits that SharePoint site so that when you actually go to use those sites are available and responsive.
Okay, and otherwise, if you just, if those hadn't been done, it just seems like forever when you make that
first click. It takes a little while, right? I mean, SharePoint is designed as a server product.
Sure.
So it's designed to be in a steady state.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing development, it may seem sluggish at times, but that's just because it's not really in the optimal design, you know, area.
Okay, once we're up and running, we can click the connect window. And in this case, we can connect to the virtual machine. And now here I have a situation where my virtual machine is a bit bigger than my desktop here.
Yeah.
So to manage that, I can right-click on it, set my screen resolution to the same screen resolution that I have on my host machine. And at that point, I could double-click on the title bar, and it would expand out and fill the screen.
So tell me a little bit about the Connect window here. When would I use it? Do I always want to use the Connect window?
Well, you have a couple options here because the Connect window is really nice. It's just a simple way to be able to get in and use the virtual machine right away. The issue with the Connect window, it's not an issue in that it's a problem, but it's an inconvenience for me as a developer. If I want to access resources on my host machine, those aren't available to me in the Connect window. I can't get at my disk drives. I can't get at other things. So I personally prefer not to use the Connect window. So I go ahead and close that out, unless I'm in a hurry and just need to do a quick thing or something like that. But if I ever need to get at the resources on my machine, then I set up my remote desktop so that I can remote directly into this virtual machine. And I do that on that internal network that we set up. Let me just open this up here. If we go into this and look at this virtual machine here, we can see that our network, we can look at our internal network setting here, and we can see that we're on a specific IP and have a specific subnet mask.
So we've set up a fixed IP that we're able to remote desktop into every time from our own host machine.
Right, and that is already set in that virtual machine. You don't have to make any adjustments to that when you download it and when you set it up. So that's already there.
So when I use the remote desktop, what I hear you saying is that I can access local resources such as the hard drives on my host machine from my virtual machine.
Correct.
And then I could do things like cut and paste as well, is that?
Right, and so that's what makes it really nice. I've set up my virtual my remote desktop connection here. Again, here's my IP address directly to my virtual machine. I can connect to that, and now I have a direct connection from my host into my virtual machine. But now the beauty of this is that I have all of my host drives available to me as well. So now I can copy files to and from, and that makes it really nice because if I've developed something and I want to save it off and move it to another environment, I have that path to do that now.
Yeah, so the remote desktop gives us local drive access and clipboard access.
And clipboard access.
But then the Connect window is valuable as well. For example, I can connect using the Connect window even if I don't have any network connections at all to the machine, right?
That's correct.
Good. So it sounds like, you know, fairly easy to set up. We've downloaded the files. We've unzipped it. We've imported them. We've played with some of our settings to get it configured just right, and then we're able to begin development.
Yes, absolutely. So enjoy it.
Good. And so maybe we can pop back to the slides and see where we download, show some download links here.
Let's go ahead and do that.
And so here there are a couple of resources for you. You can download the this VHD, which is the 7A or the 7B, from the links provided here. And you can also download a walkthrough guide that'll walk you through creating kind of some Hello World applications using this VHD.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, I think this has been great. I mean, look forward to hearing from everyone. Hopefully you found this information useful. Keep the feedback coming, and look forward to the next episode. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.